Well, let's move now from the 19th century, crime in the 19th century, to crime writing in the 21st century. Australian crime writer Gabrielle Lord has written 15 novels for adults and another 15 for young adults. That's such a lot of books. And a number of her books have made it to the screen. Her latest is called Death by Beauty. It's just been released. And last night, during the Melbourne Writers' Festival, Gabrielle Lord won the Ned Kelly Lifetime Achievement Award for long-term services to Australian crime writing. And she's in the studio and she's wearing an inner glow. Congratulations.
Thank you, Michael.
Did they actually give you a trophy?
They did. They gave me a wonderfully peculiar trophy, which is the Ned Kelly Trophy, and a beautiful framed certificate.
A thing to put on the wall. What's the trophy look like?
It actually reminds me of a burns victim. I probably shouldn't say that.
But oh, that's not very
grateful. It's sort of black and and crinkly and...
Right.
It's Ned Kelly's head armour. You know, the bucket thing that he wore over his head with a slot, like Sidney Nolan painted him?
Yeah, but not that attractive, you're saying.
Well, yeah, well, I guess the armour isn't.
The first question on the page is, what does it mean to win the Ned Kelly Lifetime Achievement Award? And what you're saying is you end up with this rather ugly thing to put on the mantelpiece.
Look, it's a wonderful thing and I'm really thrilled. That's my second one because Death Delights won a normal Ned.
That was in 2002.
That's right. So it'll take its place happily beside the other Ned. When my publisher rang to say that a man called Peter was going to ring me with some exciting news, I didn't know what she meant. So I was absolutely delighted when I heard.
It sounds biblical to me. A man called Peter is going to ring you with exciting news.
Yes, it was a prophecy that came true.
Well, the previous winners of the Lifetime Award include Shane Maloney.
Yes.
Meryl Day. Sandra Harvey.
And Peter Corris. Peter Doyle.
Maybe I haven't got the right list. Maybe those are people who've won Ned Kelly Awards in general. Anyway, it's a big list of names. Do you look at these names and think, oh, yeah, we're all in the same game? Or are you all doing different stuff?
I think we're all doing different stuff, Michael. We see each other very rarely at festivals and such. But I think there's a camaraderie that does exist when we do get together. But, I mean, I see myself in the tradition of storytelling, and I'm sure they do too.
So let's talk about your crime writing career. You say on your website that your first two manuscripts ended up as compost.
That's right. But I learned a lot. And I learned to keep going. I learned not to get stuck. If you get stuck, just pick up and go somewhere else. And from that learning, that tenacity, which is, I think, all you really need to write novels is tenacity. Talent, maybe a bit, but tenacity.
So it's sitting down every day and being disciplined, is it?
Yeah. I used to get up at 4 o'clock and do 2 hours before I went to work and my daughter went to school because that was the only time I had. And if you're prepared to do that for a couple of years, you'll have a book at the end of it.
And I guess you'll learn on the way.
You will learn on the way, yeah. Yes.
So when did you discover that you could make a living by doing this? Is there a kind of crossover moment for you?
Well, there was, and it was when I sold the film rights to Fortress. My first published novel, it was actually my third, and I went into the boss and said, Eric, I'm resigning. And I was able to then throw my bread upon the waters and live the life, the risky life of a full-time writer, which sometimes is pretty scary, you know, when there's $30 in the bank.
Well, you've got to keep your nerve.
You've got to keep your nerve, yes.
So let's talk about the latest couple of novels, actually, because they're paired the last two. This is your series with P.I. Gemma Ward.
Gemma Lincoln.
Okay, which is well and truly set in the mean streets of Sydney. Do you enjoy writing about your own streets?
Well, very much, because I know them well. I've gone out and researched on them. I mean, for Baby Did a Bad, Bad Thing, I went out with a wonderful sex worker called Eve, and she showed me all the traps and the business. So the mean streets are full of fabulously interesting people.
We've just been talking about the mystery of the hansom cab and reflecting on how rooted it is in the geography of Melbourne in the 1880s. And it strikes me, looking at your books, that you really are evoking Sydney. These aren't, well, I suppose they are crimes you could set anywhere, but they feel as though they're coming out of the very fabric of the city.
Well, they do. Feeding the Demons particularly came out of a crime scene photograph of a Sydney crime scene. And I based, you know, I asked myself, imagine finding something like that on your floor. And I based the whole novel on that question. So the streets and the places where Gemma and her sister live are very much eastern suburbs Sydney, where I walk and know. It's a dramatic coastline, beautiful sandstone coastline, cemeteries.
Do you ever wonder why you're doing this? Is there ever a part of you that says, why am I bringing into the world these stories of violence and horror and misery? Aren't I adding to the sum of bad energy in the, on the
it's
planet?
It's a very good question, Michael. The way I look at it, I feel that I'm weaving and plaiting stuff that's already there, so I'm not actually bringing anything new. I'm picking up strands. There's a moment, a sort of a moment of conception, excitement when an idea strikes. And I then look around and find bits and pieces in the world already that I can use. And then I weave them together in my story. And I hope that always in my books there's a redemptive element at the end. There'll be something that'll just lift the spirit on the last page. And I think if you look out for those in my book, you will always find them. There'll be either, you know, porpoises, dolphins breaking the surface of the sea as Gemma looks out, or some wonderful epiphany, because I think the responsibility of the crime writer is to make order and justice occur, even if it's only in the mental world of a book, in a world that very often that doesn't seem to happen.
I think the other thing I look for in fiction is a sense that violence... That violence is understood as having a human impact, which is real rather than just entertaining. And I thought this years and years ago, and I was watching a Western with a friend of mine who's a screenwriter, and we, you know, there's a guy on top of the pub or whatever it is, the saloon, who gets shot and he falls backwards, you know, into the street, and that's all entertaining. And this guy says to me, you know, if you're a really good writer, you care about the implications for that man. It's not just, wow, we shot a guy. The human cost of falling on your back in the street needs to be pursued.
I think that's very important. And it's something I took quite seriously. Gemma's character, she is actually the daughter of a murdered mother. And I used to go to victims of homicide meetings sometimes. And in this case, the murderer was the father of the child. So just imagine growing up, having your mother murdered by your father and your father in prison. Mm. These are very tragic and awful events, and they do impact. They impact on families probably for generations. And that's always been my interest, is the generational flow on of both good and evil, and how eventually we must all deal with the stuff that we've been handed. And that's, in a way, I'm exploring that in the Gemma Lincoln series, of how Gemma does start to come to terms with this pretty awful heritage that she has.
On Books and Arts Daily, I'm talking to Gabrielle Lord, because she's just won a Ned Kelly Lifetime Achievement Award, and her latest book is called Death by Beauty. In fact, the generations are stirring in this book, because Gemma's had a kid. So she's now juggling being a sleuth with being a mum.
Oh, what a nightmare that's been for the writer and her editors. Where's that baby all the time? That baby had to be dealt with, just as babies have to be dealt with in real life. So I was blithely riding away and, you know, making the occasional reference to Raffy. And it's a long time since I've had a little one. So I had plenty of younger editors telling me, you know, he's got to be fed, he's got to be cuddled, he's got to be played with, he's got to be taken to preschool, somebody's got to pick him up.
Well, she does seem to find babysitters to look after this baby when it really matters.
Well, that's right. You have to. You have to.
I mean, and she's sort of sustained by a community of women, really.
She's got she's got a good friend in Angie McDonald, the detective, and she's also got a wonderful support in her sister Kit.
I'm sure you had a lot of fun writing this, because you've had to invent, I guess you have invented, some science in this book. It's got a sort of, I don't know how much to say, really. It's got a sort of plastic surgery theme.
That's right. That's right.
Do you want to tell us very briefly how that works?
Well, I love all that technical stuff. My dad was a GP, and I'm probably a Dr. Monquet, really. But I enjoy all that research, and I love the cutting edge of science.
You know, funnily enough, I don't want to go to a doctor who imagines what it's like to kill people. Is that weird?
Well, they keep a black book, the doctors, of the ones they kill.
Is that right? Yeah. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You were explaining the plastic surgery thing.
Well, I love all that. I love all that. There's wonderful work going on in science. And I'm a member of a couple of forensic societies and I go to their presentations. And I've got to be ahead of the game because by the time a book comes out, something that's fresh and edgy when I first hear about it, 18 months down the track might be general knowledge. So I have to pick things that are coming up.
Well, you're not only jumping on the science bandwagon, you're also jumping on the vampire bandwagon in this
one.
Oh,
yes, I had to do that.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about how this vampire enters the story?
Well, I don't know what I can say about the vampire. Some people didn't like him. Some editors wanted him removed or wanted vampire bits removed, but I think he's a nice motif. The person who preys on other people, who uses people. You know, there's a wonderful medieval definition of Satan as that spirit who useth human souls as objects. And I think that's a pretty good indication of evil.
Mm. I felt that perhaps Gemma wasn't paying enough attention to the Underbelly franchise on TV because she tangles with a blonde, stroppy underworld woman who acts a bit like a younger and scarier Judy Moran, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Well, Lorraine's been gunning for her for a while through a few books now. She first met Lorraine when her boyfriend was sadly unfaithful with her.
Now, you also write young adult fiction. You've written as many books for young adults as you have for adults. How do you deal with the violence issue when you're dealing with writing for the younger reader?
Well, Scholastic have some fairly formal rules about that sort of thing, which I was briefed on. And I was keeping to the confines. And round about book 7 of the series, I had a guy falling from the bell tower into a cactus, which I thought was punishment enough for a bad dude. But my little editor said, he's got to die. So Scholastic themselves.
Oh, they're pushing you into even more violence.
He's got to die.
I'm with you. I think falling off a bell tower into a cactus.
It's pretty awful. It was one of those big aloes, not a cactus. You know the big aloes with the big spines?
Yeah.
Oh, dreadful. Anyway.
So you killed him?
Mm-hmm. Scholastic made me do it.
They wouldn't stand up in court as a defence. And what's next? Are there going to be more in this series?
Yes, there will be another Gemma further down the track. And, you know, I sort of feel I've left Dr. Jack McCain out a bit. He's my male PI, forensic examiner. And that's where I do give rein to my scientific interests.
So there's still lots more to come.
Oh, yes, definitely, Michael.
Well, congratulations on that prize, and I hope it looks lovely.
It was wonderful. It was the most exciting moment of my 36-year writing career.
Alongside the other one there on the mantelpiece. That's Gabrielle Lord. Her new book is called Death by Beauty, and she's just won the, what's it called, the Ned Kelly?
Lifetime Achievement
Award. Yeah.